Good afternoon, everyone. It was August 22nd, 2002, 3 a.m. in the morning, as the Army convoy in the pitch black dark moved along a rutted dirt road going toward Beji, a small town somewhere in the Sunni Triangle in Iraq. Sergeant Tyler Hall, who was 23, and a number of his companions were in the second truck that took the brunt of the explosion when the truck rolled over a mine that had been buried in the road and it detonated. When he came to, he was lying on his back in the road looking up, and one of his buddies was bent over him trying to give him mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. And he said, which is commonly found sometimes among combat veterans in a dark John Wayne type of humor, he said, "What are you trying to do, make out with me?" And then he lapsed into unconsciousness as the whirling blades of a Black Hawk helicopter descended to take him to safety. He wasn't to wake up until 45 days later, and when he did, burns had badly disfigured both of his hands. He had a burn across the bridge of his nose. Three bones in his back were broken. His arm was broken. He was suffering from recurrent headaches, and his jaws had both been shattered and 10 of his teeth blown out, and his knee had been amputated below the left knee. But when he was interviewed in the Army's Walter Reed Hospital, he was surprisingly upbeat about it, because he said, "When I look around and see the other people in this ward," he said, "there are many people more severely wounded here than I am." And he said that he was just thankful that he was still alive. Well, in a couple of weeks, we honor our veterans, the people that have given us the freedoms over the years that we enjoy, for Veterans Day. There is danger when you serve in the armed forces, not only if you're in combat, but even in peacetime. I happened to be in the Navy in 1957 and 58, which was post-Korea and pre-Vietnam. We were on an aircraft carrier, the USS Forrestal, in the Mediterranean. We're basically there as kind of a show of force to indicate that we had a presence there to the Iron Curtain countries and to a certain extent the Middle East. One day we were putting on an air show for some visiting dignitaries that we'd invited aboard, which often happened. And there was a flyby of four Navy jets. Now, you've probably, if you've been in Seattle for any length of time, have seen the Blue Angels perform along Lake Washington during Seafair. And they have this precision flight where they come right along the water, and then at the end of their run, they kind of peel off in different ways, just like a sunburst. And that's what this diamond formation was doing on this particular day. They were probably 200 yards to the port or left of the ship and flying about 50 feet off the flight deck as far as the level, so everyone on the flight deck could observe them. And as they came abreast of the ship, they all cut their afterburners in to have that extra thrust. And I'm not sure if it was pilot air or metal fatigue or a combination, but the turbulence of the first three caused the back aircraft to begin to porpoise up and down. The tips of the wings fell off, and then the entire wings and the fuselage just disintegrated. And within seconds, the debris of the plane was spread over several square miles of the Mediterranean. Of course, we all just gasped, and then there was this hush, and they immediately called off the air show. That was 50 years ago, and when I close my eyes, I can still visualize that incident happening. It's just like it was yesterday. Later, we were operating in the Mediterranean during really rough waters, landing a group or a squadron of A3D Skywatch warriors. They were a twin-engine jet that carried bombs and that was at that time the largest ship flying off the carrier, weighing nearly 70,000 pounds. And I was in the operations office, which was on the deck below the flight deck, and you'd hear the planes land. You'd hear the tail hook hit the flight deck, and then it catch the arresting gear, and within seconds you'd hear this whirr, and it would bring the planes to a complete stop. Well, in this particular case, I heard the tail hook hit the flight deck, and then it sounded like 1,000 fingernails scraping across a chalkboard, and then this rasping, grinding sound going down the flight deck. Well, later I saw a picture of what had happened. The plane had come in too low and too hard, and maybe the fantail of the carrier lifted slightly, but the plane cracked in half and slid across the flight deck into the sea. And I'll never forget the picture of the crew member looking out the window with this bewildered, puzzled look on his face, not realizing within seconds he was going to be dead. Later that fall, we were involved in a NATO exercise in the North Atlantic, north of Scotland in the English Channel, in really heavy waters once again, and we were refueling a destroyer, or a tin can as the sailors referred to it, when a sailor washed overboard. He had a life jacket on, and they immediately deployed a helicopter from the forestall to try to rescue him, because the swells were 20 and 30 feet high in some cases. They couldn't drop the line down close enough to get him. And they finally had to give up because they didn't want to risk losing the helicopter and the crew. And so it was something I've never forgotten, seeing that man bobbing up and down in the water. And in the North Atlantic, in the frigid water, hypothermia would set in after a while, and he wouldn't last very long. So even in a non-combatant type of atmosphere, there's danger for the men in the service. And they can also have after effects that follow them. I was, several years ago, was walking along 4th Avenue, and a middle-aged man was walking toward me, and he got within 15 feet of me, and suddenly on the street, a car backfired, and he immediately went into a crouch like this and started looking from side to side with this crazy look on his face. It nearly scared the daylights out of me, so I didn't know what was going on. And as I got closer to him, he looked at me and said one word, Nam, meaning Vietnam. He was having a flashback, suffering for post-traumatic stress syndrome, which affects many, many people that have been in battle. Something will trigger a reaction like that, and they're immediately back in battle looking to see, you know, how am I going to save myself? So the veterans who have served this country are to be honored in a few weeks. They are the ones who have, in some cases, sacrificed their lives, risked many things to enable us to walk in here every day or every Sabbath with our Bibles, not fearing, you know, that we're going to be dragged off to jail or incarcerated for what we believe. And so we will be honoring them. There's another group of veterans that I would like to single out today as well, and that's all of you that are sitting in these seats in this auditorium today. You are veterans of another year in God's church, and though it's not a chronological year, we've come through all of the festivals, culminating with the Feast of Tabernacles, and yet you're all still here, in spite of all the trials and all the tribulations and all the things that happened during the year. You're still here. You've weathered another year. And we need to be reminded that, like some of the people I've described who have been at war and in battle, that is exactly what we're going back to. We've been enmeshed and inundated with God's Spirit and been blessed with the sermons that we've heard to help buoy us up and strengthen us. But make no mistake about it, we're going back into a war zone, and we need to be aware of that. And we can't take it lightly. You know, the hymn Honored Christian Soldiers talks about that. The Apostle Paul in Ephesians, the 6th chapter, talked about the armor that we need to be wearing in order to prepare for this. He himself said in 1 Corinthians 9:26 and 27 that he had to fight. It was a fight, but he wasn't fighting just flailing away. He was fighting for his life because he said, after I've preached to everyone, I have to fight lest I be cast away myself. So it's not easy. It's something that we need to be aware of. And so what can we do? What one thing is important going forward to remember? I think it's something that is very succinct. It's very important, and it's found in Hebrews 13, verse 5, the latter part of the verse, quoting from the King James Version. Hebrews 13, verse 5, gives you an absolute guarantee and an absolute promise. It says, I will never forsake you or leave you. That's small and succinct, but it's very important. If you burn that concept, that principle, that promise of God into the forefront of your mind, if you always remember it, regardless of what's happening in your life, you may be in a situation at work where you feel your life's disintegrating, just like the pilot I mentioned in the plane on the carrier, where you don't know what's going on, your boss is inundating you with a lot of extra work. Perhaps there's some kind of harassment going on that is illegal, but there are subtle forms of that in the workplace. Or your boss is asking you to do something that's not ethical, or perhaps even bordering on being illegal. You need to remember that God has promised you that He will never leave you and He will never forsake you. Or perhaps sometimes you might feel in the coming months that your life is totally out of control, like the plane going across the carrier deck, that that's what your life is like. Perhaps you have teenagers that are having problems, or perhaps your children or grandchildren have told you that they don't want to go to church anymore, or perhaps a marital problem that you thought was gone has surfaced again. That is a battle you can win if you remember that God and His Son Jesus Christ, they will never forsake you and they will never leave you. Or maybe you may feel that you're drowning, like the sailor I described. You don't see any hope, that there's no way that you can change whatever is happening. Perhaps a doctor has talked to you and given you a very unpleasant diagnosis about something. But that battle is something that you can win because God has promised you, I will never leave you and I will never forsake you. Or perhaps, like the sailor or the soldier on 4th Avenue having the flashback, you find yourself out of the clear blue someday having a sin that rears its ugly head, and you thought, where's this coming from? I thought I had overcome this, and yet there it is, and you're thinking some thought you shouldn't think, or you're saying something you shouldn't say, or you're doing something you shouldn't do. But that, again, is a battle that you can win, and that is a battle and a war that you need to win, and you can do it because God has said and promised you and His Son Jesus Christ as well that they will never leave you and they will never forsake you. And so as we look ahead to this coming year, I can give you several guarantees. I'll guarantee you that this year is not going to be unlike the previous years. You're going to have the same kind of struggles, and you're going to have the same kind of problems, and you're going to have the same kind of tribulations, and they're probably, in all likelihood, going to be even severe and more worse, because that's the world we live in. But if you take this concept, if you take this scripture, and if you remember it, memorize it, you don't even have to know where it is, but remember the concept that God and His Son, Jesus Christ, have promised you that they will never leave you or forsake you.